And welcome in to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling right here on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts, along with Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. I'm Jonathan Hood from ESPN Chicago. And Gabe Neitzel, well, he's on assignment trying to find out how he can regrow his beard.
Yeah, he's busy on the golf course still. That's all the comments is about Gabe and his lack of beard. Even some of the ESPN Milwaukee clips they're sharing from his show, I'm like, I think that's Gabe. It's very odd. So we had to take a week off from him.
Make sure that you like, share, and subscribe everything we do here on Good Karma Wrestling. We continue to grow because of you. So make sure you check in and also subscribe to the podcast as well, Podcast for Good Karma Wrestling. Well, we have a very special guest that we'll hear from momentarily, and that'll be AEW's Speedball Mike Bailey. He was part of AEW Dynamite from Detroit. And he's doing his high-stepping, high-kicking, all his martial arts. He does what Mike Bailey does. He did it last night on Dynamite.
And still no boots. So we'll still barefoot out there in the ring.
What is the big headline to start our show here for Good Karma Wrestling?
We are days away from WWE, headed to St. Louis for Backlash, Orton versus Cena, Jey Uso, Logan Paul, Gunther, and Pat McAfee. But, Hood, which match are you most looking forward to at Backlash this weekend?
Well, I have a question and a match I'm looking forward to, if you don't mind. Can I do both?
Okay.
All right, sure. Let's start with the question. The question I have for the class is, what does a finish look like for John Cena as a heel against Randy Orton? Because Travis Scott's not going to do the Undertaker walk all the way down every single PLE. So I think a question is something we have not seen since early Cena. What does that look like? What does he need to do to win the match? What outside interference or what does he do as far as dirty heel tactics to be able to get over Randy Orton? Because we haven't seen that in eons.
Yeah. So I've seen this floated around on Twitter. I wish I could give credit to who I saw it to first, but I don't know. So credit to Twitter user 12345. What if they do the Cena pulls the ref and gets the DQ like Orton did versus him years ago?
You could do that under Vince because there was no imagination. Could you imagine today?
He's ruining wrestling. That would be sort of the angle. It's just like, hey, you go home, St. Louis. I'm still the champ.
That would be the hell of a gimmick to go home. I mean, you're going to your car saying, can you believe that finish? But then again, we already went through that. Can you believe that finish? And people had to leave the arena with that. So, yeah, I think that that's – before I answer that, the initial question, I just think that that is something that's on my mind of you saw Cena kind of color by the numbers, rusty, pale, just getting through against Cody Rhodes, and the interference from Travis Scott made somewhat of a difference. But now – against a really good Randy Orton now. I know he's in the prime of his career as well, but taking on Cena, that's the champion. I want to know what that looks like at the end. Like, what more can Cena do? Because Cena and Rhodes was flat. Can these two recreate the magic that we saw from years ago?
I mean, my hopes aren't high, to be honest with you. Like, I don't think we're going to have a banger out there. I think they're going to do what they have to do. I don't know. Yeah, like Travis Scott's not there. I don't know what interference looks like, but I see 15 minutes of actual wrestling, and then we go home and Cena's still a champ.
Yeah, I suppose that's the case. I guess the matchup that deserves to be high on the card that's done a great job is Lyra and Becky, because we were wondering what is Lyra Valkyria, and I just think that the promos and the physicality has been very solid between the two. It's one thing for Becky Lynch and, you know, to say what she's doing, and yeah, she's deep into her heel persona, but Lyra Valkyria is going step for step with her in promos, very similar to what we saw with Tiffy and Charlotte, where Lyra's not taking a step back. She's not just happy to be here, and I love it.
Yeah, I completely agree. That was the one I had also. Like, I'm intrigued by what that looks like in the ring, like what we've seen on the mic from Lyra these last couple weeks. I don't think we knew she had in her. Like, we've talked a lot with her where she's the champ, but, like, we want to see more. We have seen more from her these last couple weeks. I don't think she retains, but I think that'd be a pretty awesome story if somehow she does.
Yeah, I think that that's been very good. I think some of the other matches, I think they just fall short. And this is a very strange pay-per-view or PLE for WWE because – I feel like they need a little something, like a return of some distinction. They kind of just put that out there on Raw, like Punk comes out of nowhere unannounced. You know, and I just thought that's interesting. Imagine he come back in the pay-per-view. But I'd like to know if there's going to be a return, because I think that this particular show needs a little juice of someone to return and make an impact.
Yeah, but I mean, you mentioned that Raw example. There's no Rollins on this card. Rollins, Punk, Heyman, Breaker, like, they're not on this card. So, like, they're sort of the hottest angle right now in WWE, and we got all their stuff Monday. So I think that's a little weird. Like, yes, most of this card is, hey, we can watch on Fast Forward and watch some highlights. It's not something like, oh, I want to be in front of the TV for this. So it's lacking in that regard. But I don't even know who's out there return-wise. Could this be where we get Dwayne?
St. Louis.
Was Dwayne just waiting a month? Like, St. Louis, I'll show up there.
You know,
that'd be unexpected.
I believe in the slow burn of Triple H, but I don't believe in just stopping the stirring. You just stop. You just turn the burner off and just like stop stirring the soup. You can't stop stirring the soup.
Yeah.
I can, the slow burn is not ready yet. You know, you're stirring it. Okay, fine. The idea that you just put the ladle down and just like, all right, well, we're just going to shut up. I mean, they're shutting off the soup and backlash. Why? You can't do that. Now you're taking the fan for granted when you do that.
But they are. Like, until fans stop showing up, they can keep doing this. We're a couple weeks away from Saturday Night's main event in Tampa. Money in the Bank is less than a month away at this point. I'm looking up the date now, but like, there is so much that they're like, they're punting on this, isn't it? June 7th is Money in the Bank. So it's a month away. Like, they're going to be right into Money in the Bank. So this is the one. It's like, all right, you got your money. Enjoy St. Louis. Enjoy Randy Orton. Some near falls where you get your hopes up that maybe he's winning the title. And then they go home.
Yeah, that's why I believe they need a little something, a little punch. And I don't know what it is. I'll put it this way. I believe something should happen, and because we didn't expect something extra to happen at Elimination Chamber. We just thought, oh, regular PLE, and all of a sudden there was some fireworks.
If there's a spot where something could make sense, I wonder if it's Gunther and McAfee. Like, McAfee's getting beat down, and then someone returns, or someone makes an appearance, and then sets up something for Gunther to move
forward. What if Brock shows up?
Yeah.
I've been reading the Janelle Grant stuff lately. I've not seen his name lately. So I think he's somewhere buried in those documents somewhere. But I mean, his name has been very quiet as of late, unless he's not interested. I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very fair. I think also TKO, like at least in the UFC side, has shown they don't care that much. If you're going to make them money, like, yeah, we could sweep some stuff under the rug and move on from there. So I don't think that's that outlandish.
You know, Triple H... You think that Tony Khan's really into Twitter X and really looking through and trying to figure out what people are saying. Clearly, Triple H is doing the same thing just based on interviews during WrestleMania. I mean,
right.
And by the way, you know, when we talk WWE, you might as well be talking about regular sports, just general sports. When you have general managers and you have managers and players that look through social media to find out what's people saying about them because they can't help it. Triple H is the same way. And so that's why he wants to be at that press conference and say, hey, we brought X back. We brought someone back just to keep the interest, because otherwise it's just a one match show. It really is.
Right. But like, they don't care. Like, we're going to Tampa. We're going to Saturday night's main event. Like, Cena's on the poster for that. So do they just run back Cena and Orton that night? Like, we got a wonky finish in St. Louis. And it's like, all right, we'll do it again in Tampa. You know, cage match, no DQ.
The t-shirts
whatever.
And the placard says one last time. One more match. You saw it.
I also was in the building for Rock Cena once in a lifetime. And they did that again the next year. And I think we might get a third one this year.
Are you going to Saturday Night's main event? Are you going to Tampa?
I'm debating. It's about a 3.5-hour ride for me. So
the reason
I'm debating
why I ask
making
is because
the ride over.
You've never been to a Saturday Night's main event. Yeah, so that would just be just like just one bucket list. Reach out to Joe Tess. He'll be there. Talk to him. I think that would be kind of cool. I've never been to a Saturday Night's main event either. So again,
there we go. I'm debating. It's an option right now.
Nonetheless, as they say in WWE, nonetheless, as they do the transition. Well, nonetheless, don't forget to follow us on X at GKW_wrestling on X, and also Instagram at Good Karma Wrestling. We could use more followers on Instagram, by the way. Look for us on Good Karma Wrestling. Make sure that you follow us there. We've got a three count. Brian, where do we start?
Well, we're going to start. We're a week away from AEW returning to your neck of the woods, Chicago Beach Bash. We had the opportunity, Gabe included, to chat with the one and only Speedball Mike Bailey earlier this week. This was our conversation.
Always excited to talk to guests here on GKW as we welcome in one of the newest members of the AEW roster, Speedball Mike Bailey. Mike, thank you so much for the time, man.
Thank you all so much for having me.
What was it about AEW that made you want to join that roster?
To put it in simple terms, it's where the best wrestle. I mean, I kind of see where the current of pro wrestling is going. I know the pro wrestling that I like and have liked for years. In my opinion, all of the world's best talents are in AEW right now. So it really was a no-brainer when you think about the kind of wrestling that I want to do, the kind of wrestling that I want to watch, and the kind of art that I want to present.
Speaking of where the best wrestle, I'd love for you to tell our audience about when you first started in the business. Because stylistically, the Speedball that we see today maybe not be the Speedball that when you first started. So as you were trying to figure out what you wanted to be in the ring, what was that like for you?
Oh, man. So it was a learning process. Again, professional wrestling is incredibly difficult. And so I had a martial arts background, right? I've been a black belt in Taekwondo since I was 14 years old. I started professional wrestling in 2005 when I was 14. And I was much younger than all of the other wrestlers on the show. So it was kind of a battle to follow what people were telling me with their backgrounds in professional wrestling, which were all different, and kind of meet in the middle with letting my martial arts shine, but still being able to, you know, do professional wrestling and not just straight up martial arts. And it's been a lifelong battle since. I started in Quebec in 2005, and the pro wrestling world was very different than it is now. We're talking pre-Facebook here. And if you know anything about independent wrestling, it runs on the internet. So for the first 10 years of my career, I mean, there wasn't a lot of movement as things were just starting, but that was independent wrestling. And Quebec was also very isolated from the rest of the world. So it took me many, many years to start traveling and start breaking out in the United States, then eventually Japan, Europe, and everywhere else, until finally coming back to America in 2021 and now joining AEW.
Well, who was it in your training that told you you didn't need to wear shoes when you wrestled?
So when I can't pinpoint it to exactly one person. I don't even think that I have a trainer. You know what I mean? When I have to credit someone for who, like, the professional wrestler that I am today, it's my Taekwondo coach, my older brother, who was also a pro wrestler. I mean, officially, Fred La Merveille, who is a guy in Quebec that I'm sure none of you are familiar with, would be my trainer, but mostly, like, it was very loose. There was no real tight training, but I think that was a good thing. I think the credit to the success that I had in professional wrestling is that I had a group of like-minded friends, say all the same age and all wanted to do the same kind of professional wrestling, all watched, you know, early Ring of Honor, early American independent wrestling, stuff from Japan, and being like, we want to do that, where everyone, it feels like the majority of the independent wrestlers in Quebec were trying to do a bad version of what they saw on TV. Not bad because they're doing, but bad because it couldn't apply. So, I mean, we kind of made the decision, me and my peers in that group, to kind of stray away from the norm, the convention, what was accepted in professional wrestling, and simply do what worked for us. And for me, that was wrestling in bare feet, because that was how I trained. That's how I learned to move in martial arts. And that's just how I felt better.
So you said you got involved in pro wrestling at a very young age, at 14. So who were some of your inspirations growing up as you're a kid watching pro wrestling? Who were those guys that inspired you to want to get in, especially at a young age?
So I am the youngest of four siblings. So between that and the martial arts, I always identified with the young kicky guys. So I think X-Pac, 1-2-3 Kid, early on, I saw him. Like, it's funny because at 11 years old, I was, what, I don't know, 4'6", however tall. And I thought he was legitimately the same height as I was, because that was the same height difference that he had with all the other guys he was wrestling, and he was smaller, he could move, and I was like, that's my guy. That, and then the Hardy Boys, and then once I saw like Japanese wrestling, there were a lot of guys there that I really identified with from early Dragon Gate. If you know a guy named BB Hulk, is a guy that I really liked and really identified with. The Amazing Red, when I saw his, I remember seeing an early Ring of Honor Amazing Red music video when I was probably 13, 14 or something, that I was like, whoa, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to wrestle. And then guys like Matt Sydal, Brian Danielson, obviously from that same era, are all guys that I've tried really hard to emulate.
Speedball, what would you say the state of the AEW right now, the company that you're in right now? Give us a little bit of an insight on the locker room and how things are feeling lately.
I haven't been there for very long, but it's been an absolute blast. And I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm just, you know, tooting the company horn here. I have been having the time of my life, and there is a real spirit of teamwork. In my experience, everyone kind of has a communal vision of the kind of wrestling that we want to present. And that wrestling is diverse. That wrestling is exciting. That wrestling is for the audience.
You know, you tweeted every Thursday you come home, your heart feels so full. How important is that for you from a work-life standpoint, just to have that feeling and know you're working for someone that gives you that feeling?
If we're being honest, I've been wrestling for nearly 20 years at this point, and it's been a grind. I mean, I've been functionally homeless. I was functionally homeless for like 10 years in that I lived off of pro wrestling, and I went back, you know, from parents' house or Airbnbs or living abroad in Japan, wherever, you know, DDT would house me, or always on tour. And even the last, you know, the last 3 years of my career, the place I call home, I was there 2 days a week. And I would be happy just taking a paycheck. At this point, I would be. And I'm just incredibly grateful that I don't have to be. Just happy taking a paycheck that I get to also, I mean, of course, have all the benefits that come with wrestling for the top company in the world, but also be creatively satisfied and enjoy what I do, love every second of it. Because, I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to create the kind of pro wrestling that I want to put on TV, right? That's what being a good artist is. Being a good artist is control, knowing the kind of message that I want to convey through my wrestling, and then being able to put that from my head to the ring. And the fact that I still get to do that in AEW is an absolute blessing. But also the support, the fact that I put this much effort behind my art, and that there is a ever-growing community of folks that recognize and appreciate it. And not only that, but they let me know how much they appreciate it, means the absolute world to me.
All right, you said AEW, we're the best wrestle. So excluding yourself, give me a power rankings. All right. Let's just run through your top couple other, we're the best wrestle. Who are the best wrestlers, again, other than yourself, that you have in AEW?
Well, I heavily biased towards Kenny Omega as being possibly the greatest wrestler in the world. But then also you have Will Ospreay, and it's a tight race. Brian Danielson, of course, I think one of the greatest of all time, no doubt about it. It's unclear at this point whether his career will continue, but if it does, he is really a dream match for me. Of course, Jon Moxley, who hasn't really been showing his best side, but is undoubtedly one of the smartest and most talented professional wrestlers in the world. I think Hangman Page, really one of the best right now, and he's really shown what he's capable of in the Owen Hart Cup tournament. I think Josh Alexander has been one of the best in the world for a long time, and despite being part of the Don Callis family, his joining AEW is incredibly exciting. I think MJF does what he does better than absolutely anybody in the world right now. Do you want me to keep going or is that enough?
I mean, it's up to you, man. If you want to keep going, I mean, that's yeah. You rattled off. I mean, you did that quickly without much hesitation. I'm impressed.
Speedball, did I hear Kyle Fletcher or did you miss his name?
I did. I missed his name. Again, Kyle Fletcher has been a guy whose career I've been following for a very, very long time. He and I first met in England in, I think, 2016, where he had just moved over there from Australia. Was part of Aussie Open with Mark Davis, and they were making a huge mark over there when the UK independent scene was absolutely blowing up as two guys who literally packed up their whole lives decided to move to a strange country and fully dedicate themselves to professional wrestling. And seeing what Kyle has done and how he's been able to translate that to AEW at his age is absolutely outstanding. And I mean, I don't think he's there yet. I think he has a lot to prove, but he's very clear in his message that he wants to be known as the greatest pro wrestler of all time. And I think that is a strong possibility for him.
So Speedball, it's one thing to be booked, but it's another thing to be wanted for the long haul. What does this mean to you personally for you to be connected to All Elite Wrestling, for Tony Khan and for the company to say, yeah, we want you on TV on a regular basis. We love your talent. That's just to drop into a city or to a country, but actually to be on television on a regular basis for a company.
That's what I've been working for my whole life, basically. Professional wrestling has been what I wanted to do. And I knew the level at which I wanted to do it. And I mean, I feel like this is exactly where I belong. It feels very validated. And I'm glad there is a whole team of people that are in agreement that this is where I am as a pro wrestler. This is what I want to do. I mean, I think art is subjective, right? But there is such a thing as being an objectively good professional wrestler. And that's something that I learned over in DDT in Japan. And I think there's a lot of AEW that draws from DDT. I don't know if you guys are familiar with DDT.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So they are known for doing more outlandish matches and really pushing the envelope when it comes to the art form of professional wrestling and how it's presented. And I remember being there in Japan doing a show with DDT in the middle of a shopping mall on blue mats, in front of an audience that is, quite frankly, there to buy new shoes, not interested in seeing professional wrestling, does not know the performers, does not care. But your challenge as a professional wrestler is to make them care, to get their attention and get them invested into professional wrestler. And I saw guys in DDT that easily know exactly what they needed to do to achieve that. And to me, that's an objectively good professional wrestler. It's very easy for a wrestler to be good in front of their audience, to know how to do one thing. But I pride myself in the fact that I've been able to grow into a performer where you can put me into any situation at all, and I will achieve whatever the goal is. I will make the audience feel however you want me to make them feel through professional wrestling. And the fact that Tony Khan and a large group of people are in agreement that I am able to do that, and I am worthy of being put on national television and asked to do that, means the absolute world to me, because that's who I want to be as an artist.
For you, in terms of having a home, how different is it having slower weekends? Your wife posted being in Vegas, bouncing around. You don't have to do that this year. How different is that for you to slow it down a little bit?
It's great in a lot of ways. I mean, it's still incredible watching my wife, Veda, who did commentary on a WrestleMania weekend for 9 different shows. Veda works incredibly hard all the time. And we were on the same schedule for the last 3 years, where I did, I think, in 22, 23, and 24, I did like over 150 matches a year. And now the schedule has been pretty much only once a week on Wednesdays, but that doesn't mean I work any less hard. That just means I get to shift the effort into different places. It definitely makes the one match a week that I do, I get to think about it a lot more. I get to concentrate my energy, but also I have been working incredibly hard at training and in the gym. And I mean, I think doing interviews just like this is a big part of my job. in AEW and leveraging social media in order to get more eyes. So, I mean, the effort output in total is the same. Just the wrestling part gets concentrated into one slot.
Speedball Mike Bailey with AEW. Again, catch him out. AEW Beach Break, May 14th in Chicago at the Now Arena. That's Hood's neck of the woods. How did the pairing of you and Kevin Knight come about?
You know what? I'm not sure. I don't know. We were put in that four-on-four tag team match for the one that where the winning team mm-hmm. got $400,000 and we won, got $100,000 each. But I think Kevin and I, we had a couple matches over the last few years. He is definitely someone that I get along with and get along with even more in terms of professional wrestling. I think his time with New Japan Pro Wrestling really added another level to his skill set. I have been in a lot of tag teams. He's been in a lot of tag teams too. And I mean, it's one of those things that kind of just worked real well. We kind of think the same things without saying them in the ring. And it's just, it's honestly, it's vibes. It's just vibes. It just works.
Mike, you've been wrestling for a long time, and I think all of us have goals. Do you have an ultimate goal for yourself in the business after all these years?
I want to, I mean, it sounds silly, but my ultimate goal is to have a facility where I can create professional wrestlers. I think some of the greatest joy I've ever felt when related to professional wrestling was watching people that I trained or helped in their training succeed. And I feel like my mission, my duty as a performer is to become as successful as possible so that I can set the mark as far as possible and have one of my students try to beat it.
You know, in your vlog, you get a word of the day from Mark Briscoe. What's the word or phrase you would use to describe Mark Briscoe?
It's legendary. He's already a legend and everything that he's accomplished. I mean, as part of the Briscoe brothers and then the fact that he's keeping it going and performing by himself at such a high level is absolutely amazing. I mean, he's an inspiration at this point. I think everyone is familiar with his story and what happened to his brother and the strength that he's shown and the leadership despite that and the attitude that he constantly has is absolutely outstanding. I mean, just in terms of longevity, he's someone who also started when he was, I think, 17 or something like that, 16, had his first match in Ring of Honor, and he's had an absolutely amazing career. And if it ended now, he would still be a legend. But the fact that he's still got so much more to go makes him incredible.
Beach Break for AEW, May 14th in Chicago. Speedball Mike Bailey, thank you so much for the time, man. Certainly appreciate it.
Thank you all so much for your time.
Great conversation with Speedball Mike Bailey and asking him the question, like, what does your future hold? And he just wants to help people.
Yeah. Like, we've interviewed a lot of people on this show and we've asked that question. It's the first time we've heard that answer. And it was pretty fascinating to hear, like, hey, I just want to be responsible for someone making it to the top. He's fascinating. He seems content with where he is. Like, he's a hell of a wrestler. I love watching him in the ring. And he's in the right place right now.
I love the strong French-Canadian accent. It just shines through in the interview, by the way. You can hear it. It reminds me of Jacques Rougeau, right? Jacques Rougeau's in Memphis.
Yeah.
And Jerry Lawler, of course, and Jerry run in Memphis. And Jacques Rougeau's in the territory. And Jerry says, you know, I want you to wrestle so-and-so, you know, middle of the match, middle of the card. You know, it's a good singles match. And Jacques Rougeau says, so you're afraid I beat you in the main event, big boy? Are you afraid I might beat you and make you look bad? Like, that kind of thing, right? So Jerry's like, all right, we're going to send you WWF. You get out of here now. That's like the arrogant, like, French-Canadian, like, sure of himself, like, strong accent. Jacques Rougeau said, you think I could beat you, big boy, in main event at Mid-South Coliseum? Like, no, Jacques. Maybe you should leave the territory. How about that?
Yeah, that's fair. That's awesome. Now, Speedball, though, like, he's someone that for years I've watched, specifically Mania Weekend. It's not like I was watching a ton of Impact, but he was always a guy that would work 20 matches Mania Weekend. And I never knew what else there was. I didn't know if he could do stuff on the mic. We've seen a little bit of that in AEW, and I think sky's the limit with
move
someone
on
like Speedball.
To number two as we go on here with this edition of Good Karma Wrestling. Brian?
Let's stick with AEW. Simple one here. Is AEW hot right now?
AEW's lukewarm. AEW's lukewarm.
Okay.
And here's what it is. I think we've said this before on the show, but I think for our new listeners and viewers, I think they need to know that the absence of CM Punk has hurt business for AEW. It's as simple as that. Because Punk is so polarizing and because he had so many guys coming at him in a kind of shootish interviews, like I'll never forget the face-to-face with Eddie Kingston. It was uncomfortable, right? It was not wrestling. I don't know what that right. was, but it there was a realism there. Hangman Page, same thing, face-to-face with CM Punk. And so I just think that Punk in the ring, Punk as champion, Punk on the mic, I think that just lit a fire under AEW. And he was good for business. And nothing against the young wrestlers in the company, Brian. But the point is that Punk and his return after 9-10 years away from the business, I'm there at the United Center. I haven't heard a roar like that since Jordan played. When he's there and there's grown men crying next to me that CM Punk returned, that means that he struck a chord. People missed him. And so I just think that ever since then, AEW struggled to find that guy, that lightning rod. And I think, even though I like Will Ospreay and you like Will Ospreay too, until he's champion, we don't know whether or not he can even reach that, you know, that goal, that lofty goal of being the guy, must watch, sell out crowd, must see, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, to me, my answer is yes, because I feel like the way we're at storyline right now, there are a lot of things in AEW that are just working storyline-wise. You mentioned Ospreay, him versus Hangman in a few weeks. You can make a case either way who's going to win that match and who ultimately is going to win the title. Like, there's interest there. They've made Megan Bain continue to be a star despite losing at the last pay-per-view and the way she's involved. The Mercedes stuff right now. Even the Mox involvement, and maybe it's because they're not forcing him down our throat as much right now. We get him in a cage next week. We know he's going to retain there. But Mox is a little bit more interesting because of Samoa Joe. The Young Bucks are wrestling the best Young Buck matches in years. Like, since they've made their return, they have been bangers right now. There is a lot of good going on in AEW. And also, I think the fact that there is a lot of bad in WWE and a lot of not interesting stuff going on, I think makes AEW that much more interesting. I would say that
AEW is on an upswing, but they still have some to go. Like, you'll know when they are hot when they take the title off of Jon Moxley. Imagine last night on Dynamite, for instance, sure. in Detroit, where there is this whole thing where they're beating down Claudio Castagnoli, where it's Joe and there's Hobbs and they're taking him apart, right? Well, yeah. Somewhere along the line, it would have been cool for Joe to get that briefcase, if the briefcase is out there, just pry it open, just show the championship. Do we have to wait until, like, all in Texas to actually see the title? Imagine just saying, like, I pried it open, and so people can get a glimpse of what it looks like, right? What is everyone fighting for? The championship. And they still haven't seen it since October, which is bad business. It's lukewarm because you know when AEW is hot, Brian. You remember when it's hot, like 8,000-9,000 people. They go place to place and sell out arenas and on Wednesdays. And I kept saying that, man, if you can just get people to come out of their homes on a Wednesday to come see your product, that's pretty good. Basically, baseball can't get people out of their homes to see their product, right? So I guess my whole thing is like AEW is trending in the right direction. I love that they're going to small arenas because that's where they belong at this point in time until they can build up. But until they find that guy that must see, I just think that they're still less than, but you would think at this particular time, you are correct. Continue your momentum because without the bloodline, what is the WWE?
Right. Yeah, it's just stuff happening and, you know, for no reason. And that's the thing. I think I'm almost ignoring the world title situation, ignoring the Death Riders, and focusing on so many other things. I mean, MJF, who's a future star of this company, the stuff he's doing with the Hurt Business, like, that has been very entertaining every single week right now. And you're waiting for that payoff. And MJF's in that weird, he's a heel, he's a face. And I think Hurt Business is sort of in that gray area also. We're getting a lot of good stuff where it's like, all right, he'll drop the title in July, we think, then. But there's so much else going on right now that's working that I'm entertained by everything they're putting out on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I am too. I believe that they're going in the right direction. That is for sure. But again, you have to be able to attract the audience. Maybe once they get past the NHL and the NBA playoffs, maybe that they'll have more attention ramping up to All In Texas. But I just think that at this particular time, this company is going in the right direction. I think it's a little bit more focused than it has been before. It doesn't feel scattershot you know, like it has before.
Yeah, like even and we mentioned Speedball, like there's the team with Kevin Knight and like the fact that that's happening every week. Like there's consistency there. The Hangman and Ospreay stuff, I was curious to see how they were going to build it with multiple weeks before setting the match and then ultimately getting to Revolution. And we're building that now week in and week out. Mercedes is involved in a lot. Like, there's a lot of good stories that have continuity right now, which is not something we always see in the AEW world.
That women's division for AEW is red hot.
Oh, my God.
There's a lot of people there and getting meaningful TV time. Like, Megan Bain, like, you see more Penelope Ford. I think I'd like to see more Penelope Ford. There's so many that's, you know, really out there on television more often that at some point, Mercedes championship's going to be gone. Like there's too many women for her to continue to hold up. And again, that's good for the overall brand, I think, for AEW.
Yeah. Like that four way on Wednesday night, like to roll that out there just sort of shows the talent. You have someone like Thunder Rosa, a former champion that you could just break in case of emergency. Like, oh yeah, go out there and put on a banger. Like that women's division is so ridiculously strong right now in AEW.
All right, Brian, we go to number two. And don't forget, as we have our conversation, make sure you like, share, and subscribe everything we do on YouTube, YouTube.com. Look for Good Karma Wrestling. Don't share it just for yourself. Don't be selfish. And we're giving, so you have to be giving as well as a listener and as a viewer. Good Karma Wrestling on YouTube. Make sure that you share it out. All right, what's number two, Brian? Number three, Brian.
Number three. We had some releases in the WWE post-WrestleMania releases this week. Dakota Kai, Braun Strowman, Shayna Baszler, Kayden Carter, Katana Chance, Cora Jade, some of the big names that were released. Which WWE release will have the biggest future impact?
This is a great question because I think Dakota Kai, if she depending on what company she goes to and if she stays healthy, she could really be able to be an impact player. There's something about Braun Strowman I want to talk to you about. I know you're a busy man, so you didn't hear my Busted Open show on Sunday. But Busted Open, I'm on Sunday mornings. I extend my Good Karma Wrestling brand out to SiriusXM Fight Nation every Sunday morning. We had a conversation about big men in wrestling, and not just AEW, WWE, and everyone else across the board. There's something going on with the big man that the big man is not over like it should be. Here's Braun Strowman, a guy here that got the body, he's got the look, babyface or heel, he's that guy. And what's happened now, especially as of late, say the last 5 to 10 years, is the big man is just a comedy act now. A comedy act, especially in WWE. Like, if we go to the great Khali, talk about the Big Show and his many turns, he's got more turns than a NASCAR event. All the stuff that he went through, you know, and so many others, that the big man does not necessarily get over. And Braun Strowman is a guy could have been a middle-tier champion. If he's a babyface, kids liked him because he did that little choo-choo thing that was taken by Braun Breaker. And so he took his gimmick. Yep. So I'm saying is that the answer should be Braun Strowman, but the way that big men are utilized today, that they're not utilized as monsters anymore, Brian. They're utilized as just comedy figures or guys that can get easily beat by the faster guy. That's a problem.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like when you mentioned Braun, like he to me is someone I think will get some great paydays on the indie scene, but is a guy that just sort of makes the local indie champion look better. Because like, oh, I took out Braun. Like Braun during these last few months, like Jacob Fatu, what's his face that's hurt right now? Big dude. Like Braun Bronson put Reed, him over. Bronson Reed. Like Braun was a big reason why those two monsters got put over. Like Braun made them look good. He's definitely the most surprising release there. But yeah, like one of these big men being a champion, like I guess you're thinking of like the old school big man though. Cause like doesn't Jacob Fatu qualify?
Well,
as a big
I guess
man?
That's what it is today. That guy was just kind of like a super heavyweight or just kind of like, I guess the big man today is Rusev. That's not the big man that I grew up with. The big man I grew up with was Big John Studd.
Right.
That's what I hear. And Andre. Right. Like, you know, but what you, the big man to you was Kurgan. That's what you grew up with. That's your generation. It's like
that's exactly,
I understand. Yeah. Like exactly. That's your big, the big man I grew up with was Kamala and One Man Gang and guys like that, right? I don't go back as far as Haystacks Calhoun, but you know what I'm saying? Like that's the big guy. But I guess today Fatu, Rusev, guys like that, hot
Braun.
You know, those.
Yeah. Like, those are guys that are future world champions, but those are our current day big men.
But
like,
what about the,
how
the
they
big
are now.
Man? Like, the guy that's in stature, big, tall, but yet can't get over because there's this, like, well, because there was a time that the big man was feared. He'd come into your territory and, like, oh right. My God. Now, again, TV, this is why TV was so great back then. The old Andre shot, man, they'd shoot up from his feet all the way to his afro. And they'd say, there he is, 7'4" from Grenoble, France. And they show the camera shot and just like, oh, my God, look how big this guy is. Big John Studd was every bit of 6'10". They had the old Andre shot, shot from underneath for Big John Studd. So what I'm saying is that for Strowman, it's too bad that he's not on top of my list. Like, I've got Dakota Kai and I've got Jakara Jackson before Strowman on my list.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Dakota Kai is someone that, if healthy, adds a lot to any women's division. It's interesting where when we talk about where they might end up, if you're released from WWE,
kind of sort of.
Like, are you going to go work for a company that then ends up working for WWE anyway?
That's why it's awkward for Nick Nemeth. It's just like,
right.
And some of these other guys that got released. I think that TNA is an option because they're working with them. They're not working for them. Make sense?
Okay. But, like, Elias made an appearance on NXT. Like, he was released from the WWE. It's like, hey, you can come to our developmental, but we're not going to call you Elias. We're going to call you, I think, Elijah is what he's going by now. Like,
yeah, it's his indie name.
Yeah. I don't understand. Like, WWE owns that. They had the relationship. Very odd there. But, yeah, Dakota's definitely the top of my list. Cora Jade, she's young. She showed some flashes in NXT. CM Punk seemed to be invested in her also. Like, I'm curious to see if there's something there in the future.
There's some guys there. I did a little research. Eddie Thorpe, who I don't know if that was written or not, that whole thing that in the ring with Alexis King, Brian Pillman Jr., something like, he said something like, you know, another white man is entitled, trying to get a title shot or something like that. I'm like, who did they write that or did he say that? And I don't think Eddie Thorpe is a Native American either. I don't know what that was. That was strange, but he was cut after that, though. After that,
I believe he is Native American, yes.
Anybody, he was cut after that. And then I did a little bit more research, and you tell me if I'm on track. You know, Shayna Baszler also was cut. And Shayna Baszler, I know it was awkward when we first saw her, right? Because she was every bit of the MMA. And we thought, so how does this fit in WWE? And actually, she turned into the better wrestler than the most popular wrestler coming out of MMA. You recall this? I mean, everyone thought that her counterpart was supposed to be the star. And actually, Shayna Baszler has a really nice career. I think she could be a trainer. And I did some research. You know, Shayna Baszler is like 45. Did you know that?
Really?
I didn't know that either.
I did not know that. I mean, I think back to her NXT days and like the black and gold NXT. She was a beast. And the way they made her into a star, like I think back to that Asuka match where she like choked her out and Asuka never tapped. She's part of that Josh Barnett tree, which he told us about a few weeks ago before WrestleMania weekend. Like, there's stuff there. I'm curious to see how interested she is. I think, though, like, there are options. Matt Cardona tweeted this week, quote, to the recently released, you have three choices. One, fade into obscurity. Two, coast off of your WWE name. Or three, work your ass off, reinvent yourself, make a lot of money, and have a lot of fucking fun. Like, there are options out there.
It's true. Now, if you make a good point about TNA, and that's just one option. You want to be able to get your name out there, but also you want to make money. And at this point in time, man, as you well know, going around WrestleMania, there's plenty of places for indie wrestling. You can wrestle anywhere. Again, is it top WWE dollar? No. But imagine you are able to put the indie dates with the European dates, UK, Japan,
right,
New Zealand. You do that. Now you got something there because now you're reinventing your own name. Hell, Fuego del Sol. This is like he's in AEW, not going anywhere. He goes to Game Changer Wrestling, takes the mask off, and all of a sudden,
I was there for it. He lost the mask in a violent match.
Now he's a monster. Now he's amazing because he's reinvented himself. So I think that Cardona makes a great point. You know, some of these people might bounce back in WWE, but I say this every year during this time. You know what I'm going to say? When you make money hand over fist and you have all these press conferences talk about how much money you're making and how much revenue that you have and how many people are watching and all the sponsors you have, you don't have to cut anybody. You don't have to cut anybody. You have AAA coming up. You already have Evolve, Raw, SmackDown, you know, NXT. You'll have some other stuff, I'm sure, down. But the point is, you have enough to say, I'm going to stash these wrestlers. I'll stash them or send them out in an ID program, within the United States or internationally. Let them get some work, and then we'll, reconvene. But the idea you cut them off, you don't have to do that. There's good NXT wrestlers that were cut and not given an opportunity. And if I'm Tony Khan, I jump on it. Don't worry about the Braun Strowmans. Don't worry about that. Get the young talent. Get Cora Jade.
No need that.
get those people. Right. Get those people on Tuesdays. Don't worry about the you've got enough aging veterans on AEW. Get the ones that are in their 20s. Work with them. Make them stars. Yes. Put them on ROH behind a paywall. Then put them on Dynamite or Collision. That's how you do that. If I'm Tony, that's exactly what I do.
Completely agree. I think especially, we talk about how strong the women's division is. Like, you can add other pieces to it. Like, I think we eventually go down a path where maybe they add another women's title, maybe a tag team title, but like, push them in there and like continue to put them on our TVs.
So I would agree with the Indie God, friend of the show, Matt Cardona, that you can be able to make, yourself. And I know that some are crestfallen right now, just like, man, it's funny, bro. It's so many of these young wrestlers, they come into WWE and it's their dream. Like they have, because you know what?
Right. Because
they didn't grow up with anything else. They either grew up with Jeff Jarrett's TNA, and some have, as you well know, because they're AJ Styles marks. But they grow up with TNA, or they just want to be on WrestleMania. That's all they do. And some, by the way, here's the thing I wouldn't do. Once I'm released, I don't do that. Thank you so much for living my dream. I got to WWE as my dream. Was your dream to get cut? Is that your dream?
Right.
Some of those wrestlers that wrote those, and it's nothing wrong with being classy. I get that. But the idea that you're opening the door ajar, just like, oh, thank you so much. WWE is my dream. Thank you for kicking me in the balls. It's my dream. Okay, so now your dream shattered. So now what?
Right. But that's the thing AEW is never going to be, not never, but for a long time, not going to be able to compete with. It's like those three letters, that WWE, that big W is going to be what draws people where it's like, oh, no, this is where I want to be. This is where I always dreamed of going. We used the Johnny Gargano example. Like, he is someone that would be thriving outside the WWE bubble right now. But he talked about working WrestleMania with the white strapped IC title. Like, you can't replicate that there anywhere else. And like, you have to be strong willed and accepting who you are. Like, Matt Cardona doing what he's doing is the example. Like, it's pulling a Cardona for a reason. He's like, I don't need to go over there. I can make appearances when I want, where a wife who works there from afore, and just make a shit ton of money doing it.
Yeah, for him to just show up whenever he wants to, a Game Changer Wrestling, taking over, and going to different places. Like, he's got it made because he understands, I got to market myself. I got to make a brand. And a lot of these people do it. But some of this WWE talent, they won't know how to do, especially the young people, because they feel like, well, now where do I go now? But they have enough talent to go to an AEW, to an MLW, to NWA, and just be able to build on what they have been able to do. But man, if I'm Tony Khan or some of these other promoters, I'm getting that young talent, and I'm going to be able to, whatever name they want, people will remember who they are. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, old girl on TNA, Ash by Elegance, right? The one that was the strong woman on WWE. She's been to Ash Files again so long, I can't remember her name. Doris something. What was her name?
Dana Brooks.
Dana Brooks. Doris Burke. That's right. Yeah.
Really? Didn't know she could do that.
Like, it's to the point where you forgot about that old gimmick, and she's been able to thrive with this. Like, it's been steady in TNA. Like, okay, she's a heel. Her work's better. Like, that's so. Yeah. The same thing with these people. Japan is waiting, and or the places make a name. Go ahead and do it. All right, Brian, what else do we have?
Looking forward to see how it works out. All right, let's get a little news and notes. AEW is going to get extreme. From August 27th through September 11th, we'll host a residency at the 2300 Arena, also known as the ECW Arena. We will get three Dynamites, three Collisions, and Ring of Honor, Death Before Dishonor.
That's a lot. That's a lot. Do you know how many people that holds? you were there, right?
I was there last year, yes, for an indie show.
So you were there.
It's not very big.
It holds about 800 to 1,000 people, I think, right?
Yeah. It was not very big. Like, there's some upper areas, but, I mean, it definitely has the history. 3 weeks seems like a lot, though.
That is a lot. It's a savings. I understand it's a savings, but you got to keep, you know, your ring and your lights will be lit. We're already there, so you don't have to keep hanging lights and taking the truck everywhere. It just sits in Philadelphia all that time, and that's fine.
Right.
The reason why it's at the ECW Arena is because of Tony Khan as a child. Tony Khan tells the story of his parents allowing him to go to 2300 Arena if he does well on a test when he was 11 years old.
Right.
I was 11 years old, and they said I could, if I did well on the test, that I can go see ECW, and I can go see it. And so that's his dream, to run the first time run this building, but six times, he played. So that's the story. He did well on a test as a child, and the gift was, I want to see ECW in the ECW arena. Okay, all right, fine.
Yeah, he saw Chris Jericho there. I'm sure they'll play the hits. We'll get an RVD appearance. I mean, Sabu had his final match a few weeks ago, but maybe they dust off Sabu and put him back out there. Fine. You never know.
They're doing it for a savings. They did this in Texas as well. The little 1,500 seater that they had right there, loud, sold out a number of times, two or three times. ROH had a show in there, so I understand that. This is why that they're taking a couple of steps back. To take a couple of steps forward.
Sure.
People forget, Brian, WWE did this a long time ago too. People forget, right? Early in the Monday Night Wars, when things wasn't going well, they were deep in the Northeast at high schools. People don't want to talk about that. Like, that was a thing. While Nitro was like in Minneapolis at the Target Center, like 19,000, United Center, 19,000, 20,000, thriving for 83 weeks. WWE, Vince was struggling. Vince was like in Vermont and in places like that, little high school gyms. Like, yeah, was that like 96, somewhere in there? Like, before Stone Cold was, before Stone Cold got big, before he became like before you got, you know, the Attitude Era. Yeah, they were taking like the water jugs out of the building. They were struggling. So,
yeah. That is insane. Some other free agency news. A couple guys you're interested in. The Righteous, Dutch and Vincent, no longer with AEW, reportedly did ask to be let out of their deal early, and AEW granted that.
Know what I'm saying, man? Orange Sunshine. Know what I'm saying? I think it's a cool act. The only thing is that Bray Wyatt was alive when they started. That was the whole thing, right? Yeah. It was too Wyatt family-ish. But I still like those guys a lot. I think that they could be something, and AEW had them behind the paywall. I saw them a lot in ROH. I saw, and it was good tag team, but you know what was missing was the evil and the mystery of the group. Like, they can work. That's not the whole thing. It's not supposed to be they're good workers. They're supposed to be mind melders. They're supposed to be like adding to the group of ne'er-do-wells and odd people and like building something, right? And then you had the leader snapping his fucking fingers, you know, and White going down the ramp, right? That's the whole thing. And they could have been could have been baby faces, you know, but they just, Yeah, one guy looks like Big Bubba Rogers, who was it was fleet of foot, strong, like quick. And then you got the other guy that was kind of like a Bray Wyatt type character. And that's the thing that hurt them, I think, because of the comparisons. Yeah.
They got a big match, so they wrestled MJF. They're in the Better Than You Bay Bay era.
I remember that.
Very odd. Finally, news and notes. We saw at WrestleMania was Randy Orton versus Joe Hendry. Well, Orton in an interview says he's the one that pitched Joe Hendry. He says a couple people were unsure at first, but, quote, it was perfect. It was different from anything else on the card. He said he's glad people saw his vision and ultimately went with it.
Yeah, he just wants someone he could RKO twice. Right. Who else will be willing to take it twice? Not once, but twice. The TNA heavyweight champion. I know TNA fans on our timeline and GKW underscore wrestling for Good Karma Wrestling. They said to us that that's an embarrassment to TNA. And my response is that Joe Hendry's never been in that spotlight in his life. I said that it is okay because that doesn't hurt TNA business. Actually, it makes it better. If you're a TNA fan and you know you saw that at WrestleMania, I saw the TNA that week, and they showed the highlight package, and it was just Joe Hendry taking one RKO, not two.
Whatever.
Creative editing. They made sure it was just the one and just said, hey, Joe. And like, you know, the announcers were like, oh my God, Joe Hendry showed up at WrestleMania, the TNA champion. Oh my God. Because that's what it was about, you know.
Right. You got him in a Rumble and at Mania this year. So that's a win for TNA.
So that's a real relationship.
All right. Let's get to our matches of the week.
You tell me the matches of the week. As far as Dynamite is concerned, you know, I love these mixed tags that we saw with the Young Bucks. I mean, I think we keep getting heels winning. That's a problem too at back to back weeks. But I like what I saw there in that matchup.
Yeah. I mean, I like Joe versus Claudio. Also, Rhino doesn't age. Like Rhino could be 75 and he looks exactly the same as he did in the late 90s.
No question. Very impressive. It's good to you said that we're not going to get Seth Rollins at Backlash. But we got a title match on Raw, a surprise one. Who saw that coming? Like Jey Uso against Seth Rollins on Raw? That's like old school Raw, like a pop-up championship match.
Yes.
Yeah, so I love that.
And then all the run-ins and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it was definitely an Attitude Era Raw.
Io Sky wrestled, I believe, on Monday. Did she wrestle on Monday?
Roxanne. Yeah, that was a good one.
It's the best Roxanne match I've seen.
I don't get what they're quite doing with her, but yeah, she's been entertaining the last couple weeks. I'll throw one out there that you may have to go back and find. NXT Tuesday night, the main event, Jordynne Grace versus Julia. It was the number one contender match. Those two young ladies delivered.
I gotta go back and watch that. I watched some of NXT. It's hard, man. I got baseball to watch and everything. What it is? It's just the high school vignettes. Some of that stuff that they're it's just not good. And some of that high school theater stuff that they do with man, if you want to be a serious character, just come across as a serious character. It's still learning. Like, I know that they want to say it's developmental, but my God, man, some of these people, these vignettes, I can't see how Shawn Michaels sits in the director's chair and goes, yep, that's good. It's good shit.
When I see tweets about a good match, I will go find that, but I'm not watching the full.
I tried. It's just like, okay, but this is what NXT is on this show. You tell me it's a good match, I go find it.
There you go. Main event. Jordynne Grace and Julia. Well worth
Make sure
your time.
That you like, share, and subscribe everything we do on YouTube. We really appreciate your support in growing Good Karma Wrestling. Every year we're getting bigger and bigger because of you. And we want everyone else to know about Good Karma Wrestling as well. Just great conversation, terrific guests. We'll continue to have guests throughout the spring and summer. And don't forget to follow us on X on Twitter at GKW_wrestling. And also on Instagram at Good Karma Wrestling as well. So much to talk about. Just continue to watch our social media channels. And we'll see you next week with another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. So long, everybody.